When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming to you live for the Built Ford Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are in the free Odyssey app, good Tuesday morning. It's a big Boomer and Geo live day today. We're going to have Jose Iglesias call in at 8 a.m., so 2 hours from now, he's going to join us, talk about the 2024 Mets and his performance at Boomer and Geo Live on Friday night at the Paramount in Huntington on Long Island. And also, 9 a.m., our friends Adam and the Metalhawks will come in and perform and make us feel happy in this really miserable football season here in New York that might get a little spark, as Brian Daboll said yesterday, from Tommy DeVito. And if you are someone who's into schadenfreude, like our buddy Eddie Scazzeri, it's fun to watch the Dallas Cowboys just burn to the ground. And they actually had issues with their stadium again as a piece of sheet metal comes flying down in the pregame, which was a metaphor for the season that they are having. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, man. I was thinking that the old Jared was probably thinking, holy sheet, what are we doing here, man? I mean, it was just actually a brutal game last night for Monday Night Football, for everybody involved, for us watching it. I mean, it was just brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, and, the Texans catch the Cowboys at the right time. Anybody playing the Cowboys in the future here now are catching them at the right time.
And the Giants are.
Yes, they are. So, and Tommy DeVito will be leading them on Thanksgiving Day against the Giants, assuming that he plays well and they beat he plays well and stays healthy against the Bucs this weekend. But, a lot of things happened yesterday. I read an article on ESPN, and I forgot which guy wrote it. I got to look back at it, but I will give him credit for it because he did an in-depth article on Aaron Rodgers and his effect on the Jets. And two things came out of this article.
It wasn't Rich Cimini?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
And it was, it was a long-form article, so I kind of like those. And he goes into a lot of little things. And I remember we spoke about this, and this was after he basically went on this little tirade about Mike Williams, and I think it was after the London game, and how Mike made a mistake, and remember Aaron outed Mike Williams, and we all were shocked at that.
Yeah.
Well, this writer interviewed Mike Williams, and Mike Williams basically said that everybody sent me the video via text of that particular interview after the post-game interview. And this is what I was telling you. This is the story behind the story that, locker rooms are very fragile places. And it's one thing to really have a respect for a player, and I think everybody, for the most part, does, I would think. But then there's the kind of manipulation around the locker room and how you deal with people and how people deal with the outside world, because that's something that Aaron can't control. He can control what goes on the practice field, maybe what's going on in the meeting rooms, but he can't control the outside world when it comes to the way his teammates are going to react to something he may have said. And there is a real, eye-opening discussion in there with Mike Williams about how, the video was sent to me by so many people in my life, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, and what am I supposed to do about it? It is what it is. But again, this is it chips away at what you're trying to build as a team. And then later on in the article, they talked to Braylon Allen, their running back, the young running back.
Sure.
And he goes, I just don't want to disappoint Aaron. I just don't want to disappoint him. And this is a kid that grew up in Wisconsin that watched Aaron Rodgers have all the success with the Packers.
And he's half his age.
Right, he's half his age. They always say that when they're playing, too. 40 handing to 20, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you see this and you say to yourself, there's no shock why this isn't working. And I've said it earlier about taking the air out of the locker room, that kind of stuff. And stuff like this happens. Everybody's deferring to him. His comments are upsetting players, upsetting people in their public or their private life who are now questioning whether or not Aaron Rodgers is what he's supposed to be when he got here and how he's leading the team. And I just thought that article was really well written, and I thought that it really gave you a perspective of how the Jet locker room kind of, steps aside for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think I found it from Tim Keown, and it says, inside Aaron Rodgers' complicated relationship with the Jets. And this actually
shouldn't be that complicated.
No, it really should not. But then again, the Packers warned us, what was it, Mark Murphy or Ted Thompson before he passed about he's a complicated fella that they said about him. So maybe it's complicated wherever he goes. But this was actually written before the game and the loss on Sunday. So it's got even more complicated and weird. And you can get away with some of the things that Aaron Rodgers has done and, you know, calling out his teammates and some of the weirdness when you're winning MVPs. But when you can't move, you look washed up, and your offense, for the most part, has been a joke this season, those things now don't sit well.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately for Aaron, I mean, you know, he is coming off a serious injury, and there have been reports that there may be ankle and knee injuries to go along with trying to come back from an Achilles injury at the age of 41. But I just, you know, my thing is like, I keep on saying that locker rooms are very fragile places. And it's not so much usually what happens in the locker room when you're with each other and you're practicing, you're in the meeting rooms, you're in the training room, you're in the weight room. You know, a lot of that stuff is a lot of fun. It's great to be around. But when you're losing and, you know, and nowadays with social media, it's piled on. Like, people just keep piling on. And it's easy for people to send guys like Mike Williams the video of the interview.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, I know how it affects him personally as a player. Now, how it works with the other players who see this, you know, you never know how they're going to react to it. You know what I mean?
Yes, of course, especially if he's never played with them before. He wasn't handpicked by Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Mike Williams was a guy that Joe Douglas brought in. Those relationships are tough. And I also think, I mean, it's clear, Aaron Rodgers is not Tom Brady or Peyton Manning when it comes to the leader of men coming in, commanding respect, and also getting whatever you need out of the team. And Peyton Manning did it after a massive neck injury. So I don't want to hear the excuse about, well, Aaron Rodgers got hurt. Well, Peyton Manning, you know, there was a chance his career was over. And then he had the neck injury. They started working down with David Cutcliffe at Duke, and he came back, and all the teams saw him to see if he could throw, and he went up to Denver, and he ended up having the success. And Aaron Rodgers just isn't that guy. He's one of the most talented quarterbacks you've ever seen. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, MVPs, everything else. But when it comes to having everybody look to you and then delivering, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have that same leadership quality that those other two guys have. It's just, it's more about him. I mean,
you have documentaries.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was the star of Hard Knocks, the in-season or the preseason Hard Knocks. I mean, it's just, there's a lot. It's a delicate balance. It really is. And everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows he took less money to come here. Everybody knows he, you know, unfortunately gets injured, tries to come back after being injured, and tries being the same player. And it's not working. And it's unfortunate, because if they were winning, everybody would be happy. But when you're losing, then all of a sudden, that's when things start fraying around the edges. You know, that's when players start, you know, looking around going, you know, he ain't as good as we thought he was, or he just doesn't have what he used to have. And with all this other stuff going on and his comments about our teammates, it just basically fractures the entire locker room. That's what I took away from that article.
Yeah.
That locker room is completely fractured. And now it makes me think that I don't know how the Jets can come back with him next year. I really don't. I mean, I just don't see it. As you know, as great as he was in Green Bay, and he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer, there's no question about it. And I always feel like we have to say that because we want to show some deference and respect to what he has accomplished in this league and the amount of years that he has played, the amount of success that he's had. But it is evident to me now that after reading this article that it's just too much. I mean, it's just, he's too big, if that's even imaginable.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's too big for what this circumstance was. And he's not good enough coming off the injury, not a real leader that was in there as a head coach. I mean, it's just that was a big part of it as well. I mean, I just, and I remember, I think it was the Patriot loss, but I'm trying to look for it now. But there was a defensive lineman who came out after that game, and I initially thought he was trolling more than anything. Where he was like, you know, it's just sad to see a guy's career end like this. You know, I mean, he's just not the player he used to be.
For the Patriots.
Saying that about Aaron Rodgers. I'm trying to find out who that guy was. And I honestly thought he was trolling a little bit. But I don't think he was. I think that guy now, after watching more games after that, I think that's what he saw, and he was honest about it. Like, this guy's cooked. This is not the same guy. He also sees all sorts of young quarterbacks doing all crazy things and making throws in the league. He's playing against the best players, and he just honestly, that was his honest assessment of what he saw, what Aaron Rodgers is in 2024.
It's a really delicate thing for teams, and the only way that you get through that is if you win. And, you know, and the opposite of that, unfortunately, is what's gone on over at the Giants.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. The guy's not big enough. The guy doesn't have enough energy. The guy doesn't, you know, isn't nearly as good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Devon
Godcho.
Godcho, is that how you say
yes.
that? Yeah, I want to get that exact quote.
Devon Godcho was the defensive lineman for the Patriots that said what he said about Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
And, you know, you never know how these things are going to go, but that article I thought was well written. I thought, you know, he went to the right people, he asked the right questions, he got the right responses, and it just made me think that, you know, that locker room is fractured. You could say whatever you want, and the only way that that locker room would ever not be fractured or would come together is if they were winning, because winning is easy. You know, winning, you know, when you're winning, when you're like, you know, the Patriots, when they were in their heyday with Bill Belichick, everybody loves to go up and go to work and be there because you know the next week you got a chance to win. Like, there's a belief that you're going to win. I mean, it's in every sport. I mean, you try to build that culture within the team, and it's hard to do when you're bringing in outside mercenaries.
So this was the full quote there by Devon Godcho. He goes, Hall of Fame quarterback, hate to see him go out that way. He definitely don't look the same. He kept moving back there. I could run him down and catch him. He didn't look mobile at all. And he's a huge guy, Godcho, is what he's saying. I could run him down and catch him.
But it's obvious that he can. I mean, we know that. I mean, it's...
No, but I mean, but this is the... Well, we know that now.
Yes.
But the point is...
But this was after the injury,
I mean,
though.
This is... Yes, but this is something that should have been talked about more... with starting this season, and everybody just thought he was going to come back and be great.
So
I mean, he's a 41 or 40-year-old quarterback coming off a massive injury. I hadn't played in a year. He wasn't even that great the year before. They had missed the playoffs. I mean, you know, we all assumed he was going to come in here with a cape on and take the Jets to the playoffs. It was just I don't know how we didn't see it coming more.
Well,
it ain't easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if he didn't get hurt in game one, maybe he would have taken that team to the playoffs. I don't know. But coming back and doing all the extra stuff, you know, they were running extra practices at the end of that year for him because he wanted to prove that he was going to be able to come back from this surgery because he did that special surgery, and that was a big part of everything. And, you know, so there's a lot of stuff that went on that I think I'm sure a lot of players really were disappointed, and certainly the losing kills you, and then you get a coach fired, and you got to most likely get a GM fired, and everybody's going to end up cleaning house over there. And it's just, it didn't work. It just didn't work. And it's really unfortunate that it didn't. I mean, this article is really, it's eye-opening, but it really tells me everything I thought was going on, and you know it's going on. And then Mike Williams and his reaction to Russell Wilson when he gets to Pittsburgh was epic, you know, according to Russell, and how happy Mike was to be out of here and be there and thrust into the middle of a playoff run. Now, Mike just wants to be a part of a team. He just wants to be able to be a part of winning and make a few plays here or there as opposed to dealing with this stuff over here.
I also think when it's the Jets and you're coming to save a franchise or, you know, change the narrative, all these things we talk about with the Jets, the pressure, it mounts, it's talked about more. Yes, this city, that we've got more noise around us than a lot of others. I mean, when you go to Denver, if you're Peyton Manning, you know, they had John Elway there. They had won a couple of Super Bowls in not too distant memory. Like, the games were actually broadcast in color when they were winning Super Bowls. And you go to Tampa Bay, it's like, okay, you know, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, they had won with Gruden back in 2002. The fan base is great, but it's the Buccaneers, for crying out loud. They shoot cannons. They got a ship in there. You come to the Jets and you're supposed to be Joe Namath again. You're supposed to make this franchise happy. In your opening press conference, you're saying, well, Lombardi looks a little lonely over there. You got Joe Beningo's all over the place saying that it's never going to happen. I mean, it's a different thing. You come in here and that stuff swallows you up. And this is what I mean about going forward with this franchise it's going to take, it didn't work with the old superstar player, but it could work with the older former superstar coach coming back. But it's just, it takes a lot, man. It's going to take somebody even more special than washed up Aaron Rodgers to turn this thing around with the Jets. It's just a different franchise,
man. Do you remember the, well, obviously I'm sure you do, the Patriot-Rams Super Bowl in Atlanta? We had a great time down there.
Yeah.
And on the NFL Today set, Von Miller was a guest host with us.
Yeah.
And I had a long time to spend with Von Miller because it was pretty much the entire day. And he and I were just talking about quarterbacks, and obviously we got into the whole Tom Brady thing, and you know they didn't score a lot of points that game, and neither did the Rams and Jared Goff.
13-3, right?
Yeah, it was not a great game. It was a Gronkowski one catch that actually won the game for the Patriots, but it was a defensive battle, so if you like defense, it's great. There you go. You have a defensive battle in the Super Bowl. But Von Miller was talking about Super Bowl 50. That was the one out in Santa Clara, and that was the one that you know they beat the Carolina Panthers, and we did that game for CBS as well. And, you know, Von was telling me, he goes, you know, because they had Brock Osweiler was the backup. And that year was the year that Peyton really hurt his neck. And he missed a bunch of games. But somehow Denver still won. But Von said, man, we just needed Peyton on the field. We needed to have Peyton in uniform. It didn't matter if he could throw the ball 2 yards or 20. It didn't matter. I just needed him out there. And then as long as we had him out there, we believed that if we did our job, that somewhere along the line during the game, he would do his job and he would raise the level of everybody's play. And, you know, and I remember that Super Bowl because Peyton was, he could barely move.
No, I mean, he was throwing ducks all over the place. He couldn't throw the ball down the field, but he gritted it out like you wouldn't believe. Yes. And he did everything you needed to do from an intangible standpoint.
Right. His team believed in him. His team, you know, and by the way, he had successful years because he actually took him to the Super Bowl here in New York against Seattle, and it didn't start out well as the ball gets snapped past him on the first play. But it was just a, you know, it's just a different belief in the player, and the way that Von was talking glowingly about Peyton, you know, tells me everything I need to know about what's going on with the Jets. And it's really unfortunate that a guy later on in his career who, by all accounts, seems to be the smartest guy in the room and knows exactly what's going on, because when you read in that article, you'll hear about how particular he is about certain things on the field, and that's a great thing. He wants to be able to make sure guys know exactly what he's expecting. But then you see yesterday, you know, his completion chart comes out.
Yeah, nothing down the field.
Nothing. There is nothing down the field, which really makes me wonder about, you know, the issues that he had with Mike McCarthy, the issues that he had with Matt LaFleur, and now the issues that he's had here, both with Nathaniel Hackett, Todd Downing, and I'm sure Rob Saleh. Can we throw the ball down the field some? And I know it's bump and run. He loves to do that. But there is a scheme that you're running. There's a concept that you're running. And those concepts include deep ins, deep outs, all sorts of throws. But for some reason, he did not want to throw any of those against the Colts. I'm not sure why. You never know why. You never know what he sees or how. Maybe the Colts were blitzing a little bit more than he thought or they thought. And he decided to get rid of the ball quickly. And now Quiddy Pay was in the backfield, seemed like, all day long. So a lot of times you don't have a lot of time to wait and throw it down the field. But, my God, their offense now all of a sudden is basically stalled.
Yeah, and I don't imagine it's going to get much better.
They scored, 27 points or whatever.
Right, and most of it happened in the second half, which they were having more issues with. I mean, they were never really good in the second halves of these games, and they were in this one offensively. But now it's like, is this guy really going to want to come back and play next year? That's the biggest question surrounding this organization.
And if he does today, does he play for the Jets? That's right. Do the Jets just take it on the chin and just move forward?
Yeah, which I think that they should. I just don't know. I mean, they've catered to him and genuflected to him since the second that he said he wanted to be here. And I can't imagine if Aaron Rodgers says, I want to come back and I want to come back in this uniform, that Woody Johnson is going to say, no, I don't think so, Aaron. Go somewhere else.
I don't know if he'll say that or not, because I don't know what Woody and Christopher told him when they all flew out to go see him in California. I don't know what that said.
A lot has changed from then, though.
Well, but I know that. But also, he took less money to come here. And that is something to be, you know, appreciated and lauded by the owners of the team. They tried. And I'm sure the first year when the trade went down, I'm sure sponsorships went through the roof. I'm sure tickets went through the roof. I'm sure everybody was excited. So, you know, he probably paid for himself, you know, in the day that he was traded.
Yeah.
I just, you know, what's going on now, the question is what does the future of the franchise look like, and can he be the one leading it out of this abyss starting next year? That is a question that, you know, at the moment they have to answer over there. I can't answer for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to deal with a rebuild when you go all in and it works. And you say, okay, you know, next few years are going to be tough, but man, you know, we got that championship.
But they've tried rebuilds. They've tried rebuilds here.
No. What I'm saying is that when you go, but they never really went all in like this. My point is that you go all in. This was an all in year, and you failed on a massive scale, and now you're going to have to rebuild after that.
I kind of feel like they've tried to go all in a number of times. You know, whether it be with Sanchez, whether it be with Darnold, whether it be with Zach Wilson. I mean, they've tried. They just haven't really hit on that guy that makes the big difference. You know, quality players, quality human beings, yes. You know, difference makers, no. Yeah. Not especially when they drafted him. You know, not they just were not able to really take it to another level, which is what you're looking at and what you're hoping for when you draft a Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes, a Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, a C.J. Stroud last night. You're looking for that player, and unfortunately the Jets have whiffed on three of those players with those high draft picks.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Jerry, before he got off the air with Al, was talking about touching himself.
What?
You did. You
no,
said,
I didn't.
You said you were going to touch yourself.
Prove that.
You said, your mic's on. I can't believe that.
Yeah, because I was talking about what Al was saying.
What was Al saying?
About touching.
Illegal touching?
No.
That's a thing in the NFL, Jerry.
I don't even remember the topic now, and it just happened.
I don't either.
What was it?
I don't remember. It was the very end of the show. What were we talking about?
It was
about
the statues. You can't touch right. the monuments in Monument Park.
That's right.
That's what it was. Right. And by the way, so you still work for the Cowboys?
Compass Media Networks, yes.
I know Compass, nice guys, great guys that had us. I'm all with them.
Well, that's who I work
really,
for.
I mean, a guy of your stature should not be working for a losing team like the Cowboys.
Okay. I mean, they're having a rough season. What do you want to tell you?
Oh, they stink.
I know.
That must have been a tough one last night, all kidding aside. I mean,
not only was it a difficult one, it was long.
Yeah.
Because they called 4,000 penalties.
That was an ugly game.
The
but that's
first
usually what
play
happens.
Of the game goes for 78 yards, and you can't, not that I would have enjoyed it, but if you were a, who'd they play?
Texans.
Thank you.
So you don't even remember who they played.
I slept an hour. If you were a Texans fan,
yeah.
Like you couldn't even enjoy that. I mean, you did 5 minutes later because they scored anyway, but it's like, They score a touchdown. Oh, there's a flag on the play. And it's just every, I think the first 5 out of 6 plays there were penalties.
Yeah, and ridiculous. I heard you on the warm-up show say that the play-by-play guy said that this crew is known for calling a lot of penalties.
Kevin Ray said that before the first play of the game.
Yeah, and there you go.
It really was amazing. So what are you going to do?
Rough one. All right, Jerry, well, let's hear about that and more. What's going on?
Just make sure you don't touch yourself.
Yeah.
Say yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We are brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. We're also brought to you by Jack Pocket. Download state lottery games on your phone with Jack Pocket. All right, so you mentioned the Cowboys. They stink. The Texans, not so much. They did snap a 2-game losing streak. This is when you know that things are going bad. When you don't fumble once on a play, you fumble twice on a play, and it goes the other way for a score.
Rush in the gun. Through the air, 22 of 40. Drops back. Hit from behind. Ball jarred free. But then it was picked up, and then it was knocked free again by Petrie. And then picked up on the play by Barnett, who went from the 20 to the 10 to the 5. Houston has scored on a fumble recovery touchdown by Derek Barnett.
And that was Kevin Harlan, Westwood 1.
Dude, this sucks.
Oh, you ain't kidding, Jerry.
Texans win 34-10.
Cowboys are 0-5 at home.
Yes.
How many points are they averaging giving up at home? Like, you know, 100?
Well, so I said this to Al. I saw this on the broadcast last night, on the telecast, whatever. They showed a graphic that the Cowboys, their last six games.
Yes.
Their last six home games,
excuse me.
So
this goes back to the playoffs?
Going back to the Packer game.
Yes.
Their last six home games, they have trailed by 20 or more points. Longest such streak in NFL history.
Mm. And Micah Parsons-led defense is doing its job, baby.
You know what? They're so bad. I don't even know who's playing for them defensively. They're just what they are. And they can't score.
They only
score.
Gave up 250 total yards last night, which is amazing.
Yeah, but they can't score.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know how much of this. Did you watch this game?
I turned it off at halftime.
So you have.
I wanted to watch the Knicks just beat down on the Wizards.
Brandon Aubrey kicks a 64-yard field goal.
Yeah, they throw a penalty. So and then they get the first down, and then they can't then take the points off the board. Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
And then they go for a fourth and two and don't get it. Like, wow. Joe Mixon, by the way, 109 yards rushing, three touchdowns.
Here was your honest opinion.
Yeah.
Honest opinion.
Yeah.
Is Mike, I think I know the answer to this, but is Mike McCarthy the head coach there next year?
Next week, yes. Next year, no.
Do you think
you
so?
Lost your job, LOL.
Oh, wow.
Why, do you think so?
I don't think so, no.
I don't think so.
I think there's just going to be so much pressure on Jerry to do something that is going to change the direction of the franchise.
Settle down just a little bit.
Now, Jerry, you were saying the other day that at the fight, the Tyson-Paul fight, Mike McCarthy was there?
Yes.
So this is terrible. So Mike McCarthy's there, and Michael Irvin is
interviewing Jerry Jones
on Netflix, and Michael Irvin says that he's got to get Dion as the head coach of the Cowboys. Like, think about Mike McCarthy just sitting there trying to enjoy his night. And then you have a cowboy great talking to the owner saying you got to replace this guy and bring in this guy.
What was Jerry Jones' reaction to that? Because I didn't see it.
So the clips I saw, there wasn't much of a reaction. It was more about Michael Irvin telling him what he should do. I have not seen, and I didn't watch it, so I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I think that was also on the big screen, too, I think. At least the way I read it. So it's not going well. I mean, nothing that they do has gone well.
Well, we know the intensity here with the Jets and the Giants right now. I can't, you know, the intensity down there in Dallas has just got to be so, so intense.
Well, I will tell you, midway through the fourth quarter, there was nothing but Texan fans in that building yesterday.
Yeah.
And rightly so, with the way things had gone. Here was Jerry Jones as McCarthy lost the team.
Well, I can tell you in there right now with the kind of careers a bunch of those guys have. Kind of the prospects of their futures, competitors.
Nobody wants to tackle.
Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, he looks like he's rappelling off of the running back as opposed to trying to get him.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a bad night for the Cowboys. Good night for the Texans. Houston 7.
God forbid you call him out, though.
Oh, I know, right. Then he'll call you. What was it? Oh, he said D's nuts. That's right. That was the whole thing when he got called out.
That's right.
Remember when that caller called up and we're talking about concussions and their suggestion was that you put opposite magnets in the helmets so they repel off of each other and they don't hit heads? That's what it looked like was going on there with Trayvon Diggs and Joe Mixon.
He didn't want any part of it. Not any part.
It's like
you,
he was running hard but away from him.
Yeah.
Like he ran like this. Like, here comes Joe Mixon at him. And instead of running at him, he ran up the field.
Right, like it was his teammate.
Yeah. Let me ask you, are you into the end zone?
My gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, not good. Woo. Not good, not good.
That's what you call a business decision.
I guess so. And he is not 100% healthy. And he's not healthy.
I know, but I ain't getting hurt for this team.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Then you've got the whole Tommy DeVito situation with the Giants. We did hear from Brian Daboll yesterday why they made the move now.
This was a decision that we needed to make here and try to spark things, change things up. And, you know, we went and did it with Tommy. Again, we spent a lot of time here over the last week.
And they were going over things.
I mean, they didn't spend a lot of time. They knew this was happening. And quite frankly, I think they did this. We know the money side of it for Drew Lock, but they're playing at home next week. And they're playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Buccaneers.
Right. Giants do not want to see, Giant fans do not want to see Drew Lock.
Yeah.
They don't want, this is an ode to the fan base. This is like, let's play the kid, let's get people interested, and let's see if he can give us the spark, as Brian Daboll said.
With cheese.
Yeah, and Tommy DeVito is, you know, John Mara's thinking like that too, because I remember last year when people were talking about Saquon getting traded, the way he talked in that offseason Hard Knocks, like, this is our best player. There's a million 26 jerseys out there. We're not going to trade him. It's the only thing that people will show up and watch this team for. I think that conversation was had from the owner as well.
We
got to give our fans something. Like, Drew Lock's not going to excite anybody. People love Tommy DeVito. It's a good story. So let's go.
And they like the Cowboys 0-5 at home. So they haven't given the fan base much to enjoy so far this year. Jaguars head coach Doug Peterson remains the head coach of the Jaguars, at least for now. He met the media Monday after getting just clobbered by the Lions on Sunday. What is the issue with your team?
I think you got to be really, really careful when you start pointing fingers at certain people. It's a dangerous thing, and I'm not going to do that. Not doing it. Not right now.
Can't do it.
So not going to do it.
Well, that's what he's talking about, the fragility of the locker room. You don't want to trigger any of your players, you know. You don't want to hurt their feelings.
Apparently not.
No, you can't.
But it's okay that your team can give up seven touchdowns on the first seven drives of a game.
You can't hurt the feelings of the players. It's just
52.
They can't handle it, Jerry.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
They gotta watch their TikTok videos and, you know, gotta make sure that everything's okay and they enjoy themselves and forget that they're actually professional football players.
Your professional basketball players last night at the Garden blew out the Wizards 134-106. All five of the Knicks starters in double figures, led by Jalen Brunson with 26 points and 11 assists. Here's Tom Thibodeau, loves the way his team played.
I thought the tone was set with Kat and Jalen, particularly Jalen's, the way he came out, that aggressiveness was huge to set the tone for the game. And then when you look at the way Mikhail and OG and Josh are playing, they're creating a lot of good stuff for us.
I'll tell you what, you know, when you beat the Zagnuts of the NFL, the NBA, which they did. They took care of business. These last three games just hammered two of the worst teams in the league.
The Nets are not one of the worst teams in the league, but I understand your point.
And then now they go out west. And every team that they play out there, they can beat every team because there's no great teams on their schedule. This is that 10-game window I was telling you guys about.
10-game window.
Oh, now we're in a 10-game window.
Well, I brought it up last week.
Yeah, 10-game window. Take a look, see what happens.
Yeah, you beat the slag nuts, and then you go out west, and you come home maybe with a loss.
Because nuts handed to them.
Maybe you have one loss on this road trip. You know, I mean, because you went out one night and everybody had a good time. But you come back with a winning record and you take care of business against teams that you're better than. And they're
slag nut nets.
That's right. And, you know, the nice thing about last night is you actually get a lot more players on the court playing. Like, the whole roster played last night.
A little deeper than we've been seeing so
far. Yeah, but
so
I mean, good. It's smart. I mean, they're killing them. So let's give these other guys a chance to play.
Let's see. In Phoenix, in Utah, Denver, Dallas, Charlotte.
You could beat every single one of those teams. Five. Utah stinks. Phoenix is like,
You take 3-2?
No, I want 4-1 at minimum.
4-1
they should
at
be able
minimum.
To, with this roster, with this team, they're healthy. Go out there and kick the crap out of these guys. Let's go.
Yeah, man. November regular season basketball.
It's firing up. Every game counts, G.
Yeah.
Especially when you're doing these cup games.
Damn right.
The cup game. Luis Heel and Paul
By the way, we're 2-0 in cup games. 2-0.
Good.
2-0 in a cup.
Maybe you can hoist that cup in Vegas and you'll get a banner.
I'll be so happy.
Be proud of that banner.
Guys in the Knicks will each make an extra $1 million apiece for it. So happy for those guys.
I know, and they're struggling.
So you have made me hate the Knicks.
Why?
You.
What do you mean? I'm me.
You. You.
I'm getting close to hating the Knicks because of you.
I'm becoming I don't know.
Douchey,
really?
NHL tonight, the Rangers in Vancouver. The Islanders face the Flames. Islanders veteran defenseman Mike Riley will undergo a heart procedure today that will sideline him indefinitely. The Capitals did beat the Utah Hockey Club 6-2. Two more goals for Alex Ovechkin. 868 now for his career.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. I don't know if this is a trend or not, but I feel like over the last several weeks, I have opened up my X feed, and there have been people saying that grown men are looking and dressing like lesbians. This is the second time now. Mark Cuban was the first one. That was a trendy thing. And, it was.
What? I mean, I know they said that he looked like Rachel Maddow.
Okay.
I mean, but that was more during the political season.
It was.
People just taking shots at each other.
But now it's Joe Burrow, who they're saying looks like a lesbian because he wore this pantsuit and he's got the bleach blonde hair and the very bright color. So I don't know what it is. I don't know if this is like the new thing. Like, you know how like mom jeans came back or like bell bottoms or whatever. It's like, I don't know. It's like dressed like a lesbian 2024. Maybe it's the new thing in 2025. Maybe that's winter 2025 trend. I don't know, but everybody seems to be doing that. Now, Joe Burrow's always been like a fashion guy from the beginning. But I think, you know, when you're losing and you get like tight jacket with button pantsuit, you know, people are not going to be kind on social media. It's just
the
way it is.
If you're not a Bengal fan, of course you're not going to be kind.
I realized I was a lesbian.
I always knew. You know what Joe Burrow looked like? Joe Burrow looked like Al when he put on the blonde wig of you when we did the Halloween, everybody dressed like somebody else, and I was Eddie, and he was you, and he put, and yes. I said that day he looked like Ellen DeGeneres, and that's what Joe Burrow looks like.
Well,
it's crazy.
I saw what Joe was wearing coming into the game because that's a thing now. Obviously, they've been doing that in the NBA for years, and then the NHL followed it. And now they're following.
Yeah, right here. Look.
Yes,
and the Bengal jersey.
Yes,
it's crazy. I mean, you get the like the shaved face and everything. Look at me as Eddie in the corner.
Okay? Yeah, but I would say that there's no way that I could pull off what Joe Burrow was wearing this weekend.
Or would you? I mean, you know, sometimes you'll.
It was like a half jacket. It was like a half double-breasted jacket.
I mean, it was like a Hillary Clinton from the Hillary Clinton catalog. That thing.
I know it. Yeah, I don't know. You saw what Jamar Chase was wearing.
Did you see him? I did not. I was all Burrow. I didn't see what Jamar Chase was wearing.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, too, actually.
The best one ever, in my opinion, was the Kyle Kuzma sweater. Nothing will top that one. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do.
If you Google that one, that to me was... And he was serious. That was not a joke.
Now this
that was a fashion statement.
This is when he was with LA, right?
I think so, yeah.
Right, and then the next thing you know, the Lakers said, we got to get this guy out of here. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it again. It's the greatest thing ever.
Nothing will ever top the Kyle Kuzma sweater. And the best part about it was, I mean, if you haven't seen it and you're driving, you know, and you want to look it up later, I mean, it is the biggest oversized sweater in the world. And the sleeves are basically going down to his ankles. And the sweater itself is going down to his knees, and he's just walking like nothing's going on with this giant sweater on. Like, hey, it's just me showing up to the game. But I did not see Jamar Chase. What was Jamar Chase wearing?
I want to say he was wearing, like, I don't know if it was a jean skirt or just baggy jean shorts.
A jean skirt?
I don't know if it was a skirt or shorts. I'm not really sure. I think it was jeans.
Jamar Chase.
It was strange, man.
Oh, I see it here. Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, the jean. Yeah, big jean shorts. Yeah,
big jean shorts.
Yeah.
I think I had a pair of those.
He also has like the huge like moon boots going on. Yeah. I mean, it's the thing. It certainly is the thing. And they've got some interesting fashion going on there with the Bengals. But yeah, that's what you got. Did you ever like step it up, showing up to like a big game, like showing up to the Super Bowl? Did you think about what you were wearing showing up to the game?
No.
You didn't, right? No. I mean, I wonder when this really started.
Well, I guess no, the I guys think the NBA started it. I think it was the NBA, and then the NHL followed suit, and then now all the networks and things, people that are covering the league are doing these fashionista walkthroughs.
And Eddie reminds me of the Debo Samuel look this year. Remember that? He had, like, the leather shirt and, like, the leather, like, shorts, and, I think he had, like, fishnet stockings.
He did not wear stockings. Now, I thought there were stockings, too, but no, he was not wearing stockings.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, he's not. It looks like it. You know, he's got tattooed legs. That's what it is. It looked like a stocking at first.
He's wearing, like, leather shorts.
I mean, he looks like he's going to, like, an S&M party somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's about to put a ball gag on somebody, grab a leash. Holy hell. It's unbelievable. But anyway, it's entertainment, right?
It is what it is. That's I guess what this you know. Is. And it's there are people who are interested to see what these guys are wearing, and good for them.
I'll be wearing my Thanksgiving turkey suit on Boomer and Geo Live, so from Shinesty.
Well, you got your Boomer and Geo Live sweater on.
Yeah, the ugly sweater for We Give Thanks. Look at that. You got Boomer and Geo Live on the sleeve here. We Give Thanks here, the turkey, the whole thing. So, and speaking of that, in an hour from now, Jose Iglesias is going to join us. Because he will be performing at Boomer and Geo Live on the 22nd, which is this Friday. This Friday night at 8 p.m. at the Paramount. So he'll join us at 7. And Adam and the Metal Hawks, who are our band. It's sort of like the roots for Jimmy Fallon. Adam and the Metal Hawks are the Boomer and Geo band. And they will be in here entertaining us at 9 a.m.
Oh, my God!